Finally, after 8 seasons of epic storytelling, A Song of Ice and Fire has come to an end, and there is no place to turn to escape the ire and disappointment of Game of Thrones fans. So,
if you want justice, you've come to the wrong place.
We're going to moan about it on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit research and development company whose goal is to bring a focus of respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate to the workplace. Learn more at srcinc.com/WAER.
A once-tortured teen girl becomes the Queen of the North. A crippled boy becomes protector of the realm, and a one-time bastard turned heir to the Iron Throne is banished to living the life of a wildling. The epic TV series Game of Thrones comes to an end, leaving most viewers entirely unsatisfied. There's so much to get to, and helping me make sense of it all is Pop Life producer and co-host of WAER's 315 podcast, Kevin Kloss. We're also joined by this week's fellow Game of Thrones geek, Frank DiAgostino, technology coordinator at Christian Brothers Academy in the Syracuse, New York area. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So I'm assuming we all watched the episode. That's why we're here. Before we get started, run down your bona fides for me. So you've read the books?
I have read all 5 books at least twice. I've also read the World of Ice and Fire companion book. So I'm very well versed in the history of Westeros and Essos and the Summer Isles and all that good stuff.
So yeah, you're straight geeking on us.
Oh yeah.
that's the kind of person we want here. So as we've started each of these episodes covering Game of Thrones, we start with our fan poll. Because this was the last show, we asked fans to give us a little prediction of who they thought would take the Iron Throne. The choices were Jon. Most people chose that option. Another choice was no one, that there would be 7 independent kingdoms. That happened to be my choice. That was the second most voted for. Other options were Sansa, Gendry, and then someone wrote in on my poll, Bran. So I didn't even have the foresight to include Bran. However, a couple of hours before the show comes on, I get a text from Kevin Kloss that says, I feel it's important to call your shot. So I'm going with Bran. So you picked Bran.
I did.
Was that just a shoot from the hip kind of thing, or did you have some sort of methodology and line of thinking that got you to that conclusion?
Well, as we've gone through this entire last season, I think I've been fairly consistent in my I don't ever expect the expected when it comes to how is this going to wrap up. So you said a lot of people were on Jon. Jon seemed too clean. He was the front runner. He was sort of the hero, if you will, of this final season. And so I think that's kind of what we expected. When I saw Bran on the throne, it wasn't the way we got it. The way we got it last night was very much a, this is your new position now. Congratulations. I thought it was going to be a lot more. I thought there was going to be a lot more death, to be honest with you, a lot more carnage. And I thought at the end it was going to be, we need the wisest of the wise ruler to usher us into this new era. Now, that wasn't what we got, but my prediction was still correct. Yes. I would like to say that.
Frank, obviously you could, we're going to let you get on the honor system. You could cheat and say you picked Bran.
I did not pick Bran.
Okay.
I was feeling a Tyrion-Sansa alliance because they are, I guess, technically still married.
Yep.
But, I mean, in retrospect, Bran feels right. It feels like what George R. R. Martin would be choosing now that you think about it, because the kings that he thinks of as the good kings, especially recently, Aegon V, Targaryen, the brother of Maester Aemon from the Night's Watch, was called Aegon the Unlikely, and so it is the unlikeliest people. The people who did not seek it, that Martin likes, So Bran falls right in square into that category. And it's one of the things, in retrospect, we all should have seen coming from a mile away.
Well, I might agree with that if there were more leading up to it. And we'll get into that in a little while, because I have my bone to pick with that ending. So the show opens with Tyrion surveying the carnage, walking through the fallen ash. And as he is doing that, he is on a little journey to go find his brother and sister to confirm whether or not they made it out alive. What he found was Jaime and Cersei buried under brick and rock and rubble. That was a pretty touching scene.
It was. I thought Peter Dinklage was fantastic in that scene.
Yeah.
You know, it was all emotion, no dialogue. It was all on his face. And he really, you know, you really felt that his best friend and brother, you know, was taken from his life. And it was just that disappointment of he saw the light, you know, at the top of the bricks and, oh, maybe they made it out. Maybe they did. And then he just got there and saw them. And then the hand.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know.
Yeah, the hand is the first thing you see, and then he starts pulling the brick away.
Yep.
And he uncovers Jaime, and then he pulls more brick away, uncovers Cersei. Now, you know, I have fallen off of the, a few weeks back, fallen off of the Cersei must die train. Mm-hmm. And that moment of the show, I just found extremely sad. I don't think Cersei was the villain that everyone tried to lead us to believe, that this was the culmination of everything, that it was not only the Night King.
She blew up the Sept of Baelor
and killed many,
many people.
But that was it. But that was out of revenge, and that was to get the High Sparrow, who was an evil bastard, by the way.
Yes. I mean, but, you know, one terrorist act, I think, makes one a terrorist.
Everything was in my opinion, in her right to protect what she thought was her right to sit on the throne and her children. It's not like Daenerys burning down women and children in the middle of the street. There were more heinous things done by other people than Cersei. I just don't believe – I stopped believing that all of this buildup to Cersei, because if you buy into it then the penultimate episode was a big letdown. You know, it's like if she's the biggest, baddest person that the Allied forces is going to face, and it ended in that way, that was a huge letdown. I think what the show writers were saying was that she wasn't as bad as everyone sort of made her out to be. She wasn't that big a villain.
I think she wasn't as strong as she wanted to be, as she felt she was. But I think she was monstrous from a moral standpoint. I mean, she was
less so than Daenerys.
Well, that's the thing, is Daenerys, in her quest to destroy a monster, becomes a monster herself. And that is the trap.
Yeah, but they did it so slyly because they wanted you to buy into that that hero that hero storyline. They wanted us to believe that she was a liberator. So it was a sucker punch. It was a bit of a sucker punch. So it was like it was a fake out over here with Cersei, and on the right, and they hit you with this left hook.
Daenerys's goals were accomplished in spite of herself. I mean, she wanted to break the wheel. The wheel was broken, but she was the final spoke in it. Yeah, her vision was accomplished despite of her. And Westeros had its Magna Carta moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to get to her moment in a second, because there was a lot of symbolism in that. What did you feel when you saw Cersei land there? Did you feel sad, Kevin?
No.
Oh.
My first thought was that wasn't enough bricks. My first thought was that's not enough bricks to have killed the two of them. But, you know, Joe, I got to tell you, I think you're out on an island
You drank the Cersei Kool-Aid.
No, here's what I think it has less to do with that. I think it has more to do with, if we're to believe people have a moment of honesty in them, and you ask Cersei, you are doing all of this because why? And she's doing it because she wants to stay on the throne.
Which is her right.
Which is, well, perhaps, which I would call a selfish motive. If you got Dany in a moment of honesty and said to her, why do you want this? She would say she wants to do it because she wants a liberated world. She wants a better world for everyone.
Where she is going to attempt to crush everyone in her way. Anyone who doesn't think the way she thinks, anyone that supports John's right to the throne, anyone that stands in any kind of opposition, any lowly farmer, any house leader is going to get crushed. That's what she said pretty much in that last episode.
But Cersei would do the same thing for selfish reasons. For a overall selfish goal, Cersei would do the same things that Dany would do for what we could interpret as a larger...
See, I don't see that. I don't. She's never said that.
Cersei had no legitimate claim to the throne. She was Robert Baratheon's wife. Robert Baratheon got killed. His son took, Joffrey was line of succession. Joffrey got killed. Tommen was line of succession. Tommen got killed.
But until
Cersei's not in line of succession, she simply claimed power.
Until the houses come together and say, we don't recognize your leadership, she is the queen regent. She has a child in her belly, for all people know. That is, it's not a Baratheon.
No.
We know that.
No.
So, all right, I'm not leaving my Cersei island. Grey Worm and Jon stand off at an execution that. Who gives the orders for?
Daenerys.
Yeah. It's not a pop quiz.
To be fair, Cersei not in a position to give those orders right now.
But she is, because these are men who have surrendered. They are beaten, but they can't live in the eyes of Daenerys Stormborn. So that evil just continues to rise. I thought it was a good tense moment. I would like to have seen some scuffle between Grey Worm and Jon, that we didn't get. What'd you guys think of that particular scene?
I thought it was. I mean, they kind of foreshadowed it last week in the battle where Grey Worm started off. After the Lannisters had put down their swords and Grey Worm threw the spear at him, and then he kind of looked back at Jon. And you could tell that there was going to be tension between the two of them. I didn't really feel like it needed to turn violent. It would just kind of be like, okay, and then we're going to have these two face off. And then what? How does that resolve itself?
Maybe it gets a little broken up or whatever. I would like to have seen I mean, Grey Worm was clearly pissed and angry. I would like to have seen that manifest itself in some physical manner. And I think John was equally frustrated with what he witnessed during the battle at what the Dothraki and the Unsullied were doing to innocent women and children. So I would like to have seen some clash there.
Well, I think Grey Worm exists kind of as a foil for John, because you see in Grey Worm what blind allegiance does. When you have a leader who is devoid of any sort of introspection, a blind allegiance to that person leads to immorality.
Up until he sunk a knife in her gut, I mean, that was John's problem too. Blind allegiance.
Yeah, and that's, I think, where you get that Grey Worm as a foil for Jon Snow. Two sides of the same coin of allegiance.
Either of you watch Star Wars Force Awakens?
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. So the scene with the First Order, and he's standing up there, Nazi Germany symbolism played out.
It's definitely shorthand for the despotic, leader is to do that sort of speech in front of the troops.
Right.
It's Nuremberg.
Right.
It's, you know.
So we had that with Daenerys. I thought it was a pretty intense moment there.
Mm-hmm.
I did wonder, as did many people, if you look at hashtags on Twitter, where all these Unsullied and Dothraki soldiers came from. I mean, the looks of it looked like they were pretty much wiped out in the fight against the Night King. I mean, there were a lot of soldiers.
It was very difficult to see in that episode who was alive and who was dead.
You saw hordes of Dothraki with flaming swords going into the darkness and not many of them coming back. And the same thing with the Unsullied, who were locked outside the castle, getting just slaughtered by the whites. There's no one that I've spoken to or seen written about this episode that wasn't surprised at the sheer number of soldiers that were still left over.
I mean, if you look at the rally, it's, you know, a couple hundred. It's not like it's some sort of massive conquering army. She's got, you know, maybe like 500 guys. Like, you're not going to take over Westeros.
No, but there were more than that last week when they took on Cersei's mm-hmm. army.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, maybe don't roast him with your dragon.
Yeah. And as someone said on Twitter, I mean, what were they eating? I mean, what are they eating now? Because the place is in ruins. There's no food. No. I mean, it's the details that you care mm-hmm. about, you know. That was a cool scene atop those steps. The vision with Drogon behind Dany with the wings spread mm-hmm. out.
Oh, that was an incredible visual.
It was. It made her look like Dracula or something. But the wings spread out. That was pretty cool.
That's something you can't
dramatic.
Do in books.
No,
that's
you can't.
That's something you can't get that sort of visual of her and that sort of demonic wings spread. It bordered on corny, cheesy, but it didn't go over the edge. It totally sold itself.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. It bordered on it, and it was a little more comic bookish, but mm-hmm. but it worked.
Yeah.
It was really good. On that same stage, we had Tyrion come into play, and Tyrion, walks up to Dany, and there's a little exchange there. Let's take a listen to that.
You freed your brother. You committed treason.
I freed my brother. And you slaughtered a city.
Tyrion finally shows some backbone.
Take some stones to say that to the Mother of Dragons in front of, as we can hear, a number of jacked up Dothraki who are ready to go. I think at that point, you can see that in Tyrion. That's where his allegiance is just, he's fully done at that point. You know, he's basically the last of his family now, and he has had to go and uncover his brother and his sister underneath the rubble. And I think that was just the tipping point for him where no matter what it cost him, it was worth it for him to just take his stand against Dany on that stage at that point.
Takes off his hand mm-hmm. of the queen pin and throws it down the steps.
Something I just picked up in that scene right now as we were playing it is the stamping of the spears creates a heartbeat type of staccato rhythm that really just, you know, it brings you right into the kind of the tension of the scene with that bump, bump, bump. It was, I mean, it's
and to create yeah. even more tension mm-hmm. when he throws the pin down
yeah.
and that heartbeat comes to a stop.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a oh snap. You know, we're about to get a rumble going on here. That was a pretty good scene. I was proud of Tyrion for showing some backbone there. And then Jon and Dany, we know the moment there, right?
Let's not skip over Jon and Tyrion's scene. When Jon goes to visit Tyrion, because I thought that was a great mm-hmm. philosophical scene that got some room to breathe. There was a callback to Maester Aemon mm-hmm. In that scene. I thought it really kind of, you know, it obviously put Jon over the top, but it was, you know, it was a great Game of Thrones philosophical pages of dialogue type of scene.
Yeah, and you know, you almost think that Jon's just going to go along for the ride. For most of that conversation, Jon just seems like he's not going to want to confront this thing head on. And then Tyrion brings up his sisters. And mm-hmm. then, you know, this theme we've seen running with Jon for how long now? When his family is brought into it, we see a slightly different side of Jon. He's willing to be more bold. He's willing to stand up a little more and ultimately make a decision that I don't think he wants to make. He really doesn't want to make that decision, but he's willing to do it for his family. And Tyrion knows that. Tyrion's smart enough to know what buttons to push.
Yeah, and he may not have even believed that when he left the cell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it probably wasn't until he began to speak with Dany. And she pretty much says that anyone that doesn't bend the knee is dust.
See, I really felt like Kit Harington did a great job of kind of having, you know, Jon Snow say those words and him obviously knowing what he's saying is crap. Mm-hmm. Like he, you know, he's saying it. He's like, this is, you know, this is, I'm trying so hard to believe this thing that I'm saying right now. But I know it's not true.
Yeah, but you know? But again, I think it was confirmed when he finally talked with Daenerys and asked, "What if other people have, you know, other beliefs or other dreams or whatever the language was?"
Mm-hmm.
And she's pretty much saying they're not allowed to.
They
don't get to choose. Let's take a listen to that scene between Dany and Jon.
Be with me. Build the new world with me. This is our reason. It has been from the beginning, since you were a little boy with a bastard's name. And I was a little girl who couldn't count to 20. We do it together. We break the wheel together.
You are my queen. Now and always.
There's the knife.
Don't. Yeah, you get the strings, you get the lovely music, the very emotional scene, and then knife to the gut. There, just did I predict that? Did I say that in a previous show?
Oh, you make a lot of predictions. I don't know.
I throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. That was. Did anyone see that coming?
I felt like it was going to be Arya. I felt like it was going to be Arya who killed Daenerys. She also killed the Night King, so it almost seems like, you know, a little too much to have her also kill Daenerys. But honestly, Arya didn't have anything else to do in last night's episode, really.
No.
So I felt like it might be her. But then both of them feel right. I mean, you know, Jon feels right. Arya feels right. I don't know if we want to talk more about Arya in a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the wasted characters. What did you think of that scene, though?
I didn't see it coming from Jon unprovoked. I thought if he was going to kill her, it was going to be because she had gone after Sansa or gone after Arya or even gone
after him.
Yeah, or something in defense, sure. Unprovoked, I didn't see that from Jon. And in fact, when she says to him, "Let's do it together," for a minute, I think he's going to buy in. He thinks they can do this in harmony, and you know, if they're together, they're not really together. You know, she's clearly going to be the one driving those decisions if they're doing it together.
Yeah, it's like dating a stripper thinking you're going to turn her into a church girl.
I'm going to let that go. But there's something about when he goes to kiss her, you can see on his face that he's in so much pain as he's doing it. At that point, I went, oh, he's going to kill her. He's going to kill her. And then you don't see it, but you just hear the sound of that knife. And I just remember kind of just staring at the TV, and I think I was just like, oh, my goodness. I can't believe he did it.
So do we have a problem that it was like, what, 10, 15 minutes into the show, into a, what, hour and a half show?
No. I don't. I mean, personally?
No, I mean, she
neither
was—
Neither of you?
No.
Would you have rather had a massive battle between the Northerners and the Dothraki and the Unsullied?
That would have been
cool.
Well,
no, if that's like the sort of culminating piece of this— And now you got to sort of set everyone off in the sunset. I don't think I need like an hour of that. I would like to have seen
it's eight seasons
a little
long.
More.
I want a good long denouement. You know,
eight seasons. First of all, this particular season was too short. I think we needed another two or three episodes to really flesh this out. I would like to have seen a little more struggle between Dany and whoever. So Dany going after Sansa, Dany continuing to push crazy, whatever it is that we needed Jon to do what he did. I needed to see more storyline in there, not just a conversation with Tyrion. I just thought it was just – and it speaks to the criticism that this season has been getting is the weird pacing. So for the first seven seasons – we've had pretty fleshed out, evenly paced storylines. And then we get to this season and everything just seems so rushed. And for a series of books, and even the earlier parts of this television series, when we're given so much detail, so much story, that this just makes it seem unnatural.
I read a really interesting article the other day about kind of the difference between the first season and the last season. And in the first seasons that were Martin kind of – they were following Martin's story really, really closely. They were more what they called societal issues or sociological problems. And in the later seasons with just, you know, Benioff and Weiss taking the reins completely, it was there are psychological problems because that's how you write drama in Hollywood. And that's going to lead to, the sort of pacing problems because with sociological problems, you know, a character dies. You move on to the next character, you know. That's kind of the hallmark of Game of Thrones is that a main character dies. And it's like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. I guess we're going on with the other characters are stepping up now. But with the last couple seasons, you know, not as many main characters have died. You've just been, you know, stuck with Daenerys and Jon and Tyrion and Sansa and Arya, and it's been, it's been getting in with them, and nothing really goes anywhere, or it goes there, or where it goes too quickly, and that's I think the legitimate thing has been the pacing.
Yeah, I mean, for example, so we get nothing from Jon standing in front of the Council of House members, right? I mean, all we get is a picture of him in jail. I mean, I would like, I don't know about you guys, but I would like to have seen him explain his actions to the other House members, defend his actions, get into some emotion.
I don't think Jon defends his actions. I think Jon legitimately feels like he was a traitor and killed his queen. I think he feels like he deserves what he got.
But give me that then. Give me some speech from him that says, I betrayed my queen. I deserve to be beheaded. Give me something. Mm-hmm. It was just you go from the killing to the pretty much to the council like that, and it's too fast.
Yeah,
it's just way too fast. So we had Tyrion come out in front of the council. They didn't bring Jon out, and then Tyrion goes into his speech and all that stuff. The council gathering, sort of interesting.
Tyrion's speech didn't really ring true with me.
Yeah.
Who has a better story than Bran? Well, just about everybody, actually.
Half a dozen people.
Yeah.
Half a dozen people. An interesting or funny moment that came out of that. So we're trying to figure out. Well, first of all, we know Grey Worm wants everyone dead. So he wants Tyrion dead. He wants Jon dead. They're there. And Tyrion's right. It's really not his. You're nobody. You're just a soldier. So you have might. In that you have numbers in your soldiers, but this isn't your decision to make. So as we're trying to figure out where do we go from here with choosing a leader, I do like the fact that Samwell Tarly is going to bring a little democracy into this thing, but he gets laughed at.
Didn't go very far.
No.
We represent all the great houses, but whomever we choose, they won't just rule over lords and ladies. Maybe the decision about what's best for everyone should be left to, well, everyone.
Maybe we should give the dogs a vote as well.
I'll ask my horse.
Now, before everyone laughed in his face, I thought I had a shot. I was like, oh, wait a minute, here's my Seven Kingdoms moment. You know, I thought, okay, we're going to split this thing up. Everybody's going to rule their own kingdom. And I thought I had a shot at the prediction. But, man, they just threw democracy to the wind.
They threw it a little bit to the wind, but they did elect Bran. I mean, that was, you know, it was unanimous. But I mean,
yeah, but they didn't give the people.
No.
You still have the power structure maintaining power, and the people don't have a voice, which was Sam's point.
Slow changes.
Yeah, slow changes. A lot of people saying this was the introduction of the Electoral College. So you had the Electoral College choosing Bran, but maybe Sansa would have won the popular vote, right?
But that's a lot like how it went in England. You know, the lords got together and they legitimized King John with the Magna Carta as the leader. And, you know, then you have a constitutional monarchy. I don't know if they, you know, they drew up a constitution for Bran after that. But, you know, it's not democracy, but it smells like it.
Yeah. I kind of felt like in this episode that the writer said, you know, after all this time of building Arya Stark, that building that character from a little girl running around the courtyard, playing sword fighting and archery, to being a world-class assassin, that you had your moment a couple of weeks ago, now you're done. Because it was just – she was just wasted in this final episode to me. She had a great line sitting among the council, you know, telling Yara Greyjoy that I'm going to cut your throat if you talk about my brother again. But, I mean, she was wasted. It was a wasted character.
It was a wasted character and a wasted end of a character. I mean, her going off to the West, wherever she's going, you know, rocking it Christopher Columbus style, it seemed like they just didn't know what else to do with her.
I watched that show, though.
Okay.
I would too.
But I really, I mean, it would have been heartbreaking, but I really felt like she needed to die. It would have, I mean, if they were, had made, say, like, you know, if Grey Worm had killed her or something like that, and then Jon kills Daenerys, that would have maybe rung a little truer. It just felt like, you know, hey, she can't stay here. She can't go to Essos, or there's nothing for her to do here, rather. So let's, she's going to become an explorer. Okay. Well, you know.
I would have been one pissed viewer had they killed her.
Yeah, but that's why you watch Game of Thrones.
You know, Arya was such a non-factor in this episode. It was so hard for me to just retrospectively sort of wrap my head around. She has that one scene with Jon before Jon goes to talk to Tyrion where she just says, you know, I know what a killer looks like, or I know the look of a killer. Maybe that plays more weight with Jon and the decision he ends up making than we give it credit for. But if not, what is the point of that scene? What is the point of her even being in the episode? I mean, in fact, why is she even there when all the heads of the houses are coming together? She doesn't get a vote. She says nothing outside of threatening, you know, the Greyjoy sister. Why is she even there? It just seems like we really mismanaged her. And I agree with what you said before. Like, I guess if she wants to go off and explore, that's all well and good. The only way that makes any sense to me is if they're already planning to some kind of spinoff or some kind of adjacent show that follows that area of the world.
They've already talked about their spinoff, and it's a prequel that takes place like during the Long Night,
right?
1,000 years ago,
right?
So,
well, that's one of five. Yeah. That's supposedly,
the one that's greenlit so far. But there's a handful of others that are possibilities, and that could be one. And again, my favorite character, so I'd watch it. So how do we get to where we are? They turn to Tyrion. So all these powerful people turn to Tyrion for answers. And he pretty much tells them, you know, hey, choose a king.
You're right. And no one's any better for it. But it's not for you to decide. Jon committed his crime here. His fate is for our king to decide. Or our queen.
We don't have a king or queen.
You're the most powerful people in Westeros. Choose one.
I mean, I'm going to sit back and let you guys talk about this part of the show because I'm very disappointed.
The council scene was weird. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was like, why is Brienne there? Because we recognize her, I guess. Why is Edmure Tully there? Because River Run's not one of the Seven Kingdoms.
He's protecting Robin.
I guess. And then, I mean, Sansa telling him just to sit down. Yep. That was great.
It's, I don't know why they turned to Tyrion for that answer.
You don't want to hear this. No one who's a fan of the show wants to hear this because it's easy. Because that's always who they've turned to for the eloquent speech that helps us arrive at the conclusion that no one else is able to come to, is Tyrion waxes poetically. And he turns it over, you know, to Bran. And at that point, it all just seemed too easy at that point. Like, it's, Bran, we know you don't want this, but we need you to do it, okay? Sure.
I choose Bran the Broken because he's got a great story. I mean, what the? F.
Bran, I mean, with the abilities that Bran has, Bran probably will be an excellent king. Okay. And, you know, like Tyrion says, you know, ask me in 10 years. Okay.
But don't you have to give a crap to be a king?
I don't know that Bran doesn't give a crap. I think he has a sense of detachment.
Yeah. I mean, you approach him with, you're the Lord of Winterfell. I'm not the Lord of anything, he says. I don't want anything.
I just want to just throw out real
quick.
But
they come back to him and say, well, we're going to make you king. And it's like, oh, where the throne at?
Now, we've had some major questions earlier in this season about, as the Night King is getting towards Bran, that he has nowhere to be found for very long stretches. Is that what you want in a king?
Apparently, he was plotting out how he's going to, you guys take on this fight, I'm going to plot out how I get on the throne.
But let's be honest. I mean, Tyrion is going to be the one doing the day-to-day administration of the six kingdoms. And so, I mean, we like Tyrion, I think, in general. So, I mean, Bran's going to do his thing and, you know, see the future and the past and whatever. And Tyrion's going to run the show and, you know, Bran will not father children. Thanks, Sansa, for putting that in our heads.
This is the biggest sticking point with fans. From what I can read, all my scouring of social media, the fact that Bran is the one that inherits the Melted Iron Throne is the thing that people dislike most. They don't see him as worthy. They don't see that he's done anything. My favorite meme out floating around out there says he's the kid that didn't do any work on the group project but still gets the A. Just didn't contribute anything. I mean, they didn't really develop his personality. It's like
his character is also gone for an entire season during the show.
Mm-hmm. It's like it is so unfulfilling for people, including myself.
I was going to say, I think maybe a large part of the problem why people have such an issue with Bran and him ending up on the throne is because when we talk about pacing and sort of conversations we wish took place or gaps that we wished were a little more filled in, oftentimes the person whose name I hear come up the most is Bran. They want to know, where was the dialogue when, you know, Bran is telling Sansa and Arya about who Jon really is? Where is this dialogue about, you know, Bran and his connection to the Night King, really understanding his powers? I think if those gaps are filled in, maybe we have a better feeling about him as king, and maybe it's going to be filled in the book. But in terms of the show, without that information, it just feels like an odd decision, I think, to a lot of viewers.
Oh, I need the book. I need George R.R. Martin to correct and right this wrong. I do. I really do. And I'm praying that if he ever finishes, that he does not come to the same conclusion.
In the books, yeah, the Bran chapters are few and far between, and you just anticipate them, and you're like, I don't care about the Greyjoys. Give me another Bran chapter.
I did say I don't care about the Greyjoys. My God, they spend a lot. And that's my point about this show, is they spend so much time and detail on so many things, like the Greyjoys, and then you get things like John being in jail and we're not getting to understand his thinking or his rationale.
That's what happens when you run out of books.
And one of my biggest issues with this season and this ending is that this series, the books and the TV show, has had tragedy and injustice just in it, right? It's just a part of it. And there's never been anything in this that rings of fairy tale. But we get to the end and we get a fairy tale ending.
I don't think we got a fairy tale
ending. That's a fairy tale ending.
You think Jon having to go back to the wall is a fairy
tale
ending?
He's not dead. He's not dead. He's going, and in fact, he's going where he wants to be.
I thought Jon going, we're, I guess, assuming that he's going north of the wall and not coming back and joining the wildlings.
Yeah, he's with the wildlings.
I felt like that was a kind of a spiritually reconnecting with Ygritte, who was, you know, his one true love.
Fairy tale. That's where he wants to be. That's fairy tale ending.
I guess.
The only thing it's missing is a resurrected Ygritte and a baby, you know? I got pregnant before you went south.
In the fairy tale ending, Jon and Daenerys decide to rule justly till the end of their days. And,
no, that's super. That's fairy tale XXL. This is just fairy tale light. And you know, just the it is a fairy tale ending to me, and I think people expected more tragedy.
There's no pleasing you, Joe.
No, there's not. There's not. We know what camp you're in, so we're going to get to that in a second, because you're not bothered by this episode. I can't tell what you, Kevin.
Here is my sort of disclaimer. I don't watch series finales. I've invested years in shows, and I refuse to watch series finales because I'm always disappointed. I felt like this was going to be different, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
There's just there's too many gaps for me, and I understand what I'm about to say is not how stories really work. There's too many things that I'm left wondering about. I'm left wondering about Sansa in the North. I'm left wondering about, where is Arya actually going? Do we actually know if she ever arrives anywhere? I think we're not entirely sure what Jon going north means at this point, if he's at the Wall, if he's with the Wildlings. What exactly is that all like for him? So, yeah, I'm disappointed. I hate to say this. I would feel better about this if there had been a lot more death in the episode. For a long stretch of time, it was, there will not be a happy ending. That's not how this story is told. And then in the end, while I won't say it's a fairy tale ending like you would say, I think for the most part, most people came out fairly clean, fairly untouched.
Yeah. Defend yourself, sir.
The look on your face tells me you don't agree, and that's perfectly fine.
Defend yourself.
I think if we're talking about, overarching themes of the series, you've got your sort of things where it sort of ties into, real world societal threats. You know, the Army of the Dead, the White Walkers. You can make parallels to that in climate change and the threats, people not taking the threats seriously. If you're talking about blind allegiance to an autocratic ruler and who lacks any kind of introspection, we don't have to go very far to see that sort of thing. And if we're talking about, people who are experience cruelty but don't themselves become cruel. Or who don't give themselves over to it. Sansa, you could argue, gave herself over to a little bit of cruelty when she let Ramsay get eaten by his own dogs. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But she never quite turned that heel turn, obviously, that like someone like Daenerys did. Okay. I don't think everyone comes out clean, but they don't come out terrible. No one comes out completely clean in this, except for maybe for Brienne and Pod, who, seem to be the most virtuous characters.
Yeah, and Brienne sitting there finishing Jaime's story.
And starting her own as Lord Commander of the Kingsguard.
Yeah, but she didn't write anything in the book about herself. That's just another kick in the shin to women in this. With regard to how women were portrayed. It's complex, but it's also there are mixed messages. You have heroines,
yeah.
And at the same time, you have people who are just extremely subservient and serving as plot devices. And there are some. I'm sure we can get into a whole episode on race and gender in this series. You mentioned John going beyond the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Half that wall should be gone.
Well, not half of it, but,
He didn't just blow like a little walk. We saw that thing come a-tumbling down.
That was at Eastwatch, and obviously there's a gap at Eastwatch, and, I don't know
so
where
why do
you
we
get
need to, why do we,
700 feet of ice.
It's like, come on with this stuff, man.
The purpose of the Night's Watch is kind of a mystery.
Yeah.
What does the Night's Watch do now?
Well, we know. Yeah. What do they do now? Yeah.
So we're cool with the Wildlings, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no threat. So what? I don't know what the Night's Watch does.
Yeah. So, look, I turned to some past guests on this strip of shows to find out what they thought about the episode. So I mentioned that Dan Cohen was on the show. I think he falls into your camp. He didn't find that this was such a terrible episode. Here's what Dan had to say.
I was pleasantly surprised at how they were able to tie up everything and give each character an appropriate send-off. We can debate the plot holes and how fast we got there and how we needed more time with each character to get to where we were going. But I think ultimately, even if we got a full 10-episode season, I still think we would have ended up in the place we were last night. I think every character got an appropriate send-off. John and Danny in the throne room and what happened there was pretty shocking, and I think the symbolism of the Iron Throne being melted down by Danny's child was pretty powerful. I think that was the most impactful moment of the episode.
I do agree with Dan in that I think that's where it would end up anyway. Where I take issue, not with him but with the show itself, is it does need another couple of episodes to help get me there.
I agree. Right? I agree.
I mean, I think you could have started to bleed some of those things, and you could have easily had a conversation where, you know, John is talking to Arya about going back to the North, and Arya starts to drop hints of, you know, well, maybe I don't go back to the North. That sort of makes her Christopher Columbus trip, as you put it, maybe a little less shocking at the end. You could have started to trickle in things if we had a couple more episodes. Still end up in the same place, but then maybe people feel a little bit better about, you know, the track we took to get there.
I feel like in the last couple of episodes, we kind of got into the immutable story beats that Martin was like, this is how it is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, have your fun with it, but this is how it will be.
Yeah. I mean, we know he's a huge fan of Lord of the Rings, and I believe he likes that Lord of the Rings ending. So, you know, you could probably guess. But again, my issue is that there's so much injustice and heartbreak and tragedy throughout that when you get to that, what I call a fairy tale ending, just it's, what did I say on social media? It lands like a lump of bird poop on a windshield. That's the way it thudded.
I'm glad you brought up Tolkien. I was watching the show last night with my girlfriend, and it was the second episode she's ever seen. And she pointed out when they brought out the Song of Ice and Fire book, she was just like, oh, that's the Tolkien. Mm-hmm, They're going full Tolkien.
Yep, they sure were. They sure were. I turned to Leslie Streeter. She's entertainment writer at the Palm Beach Post down in West Palm Beach, Florida. As a returning guest, and she falls into my category in which she was pretty much found it an unsatisfying ending.
The thing I do like about it is that, to me, Tyrion emerges as the most important character on the show because he's kind of set everything up. You know, he still gets to be the hand of the ruler. He's the one who negotiated Sansa to keep her bit of the North, which I thought was great. I thought Sansa should have ruled it all. I think Bran is boring, but I get it. You know, there was no way to make it truly satisfying. A, it's over. B, it just, there wasn't enough time. There needed to be 6 more episodes to expand a lot of those things and give each of those segments their own episode, really. John wound up not being king of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And just wandered off back to look like an emo drummer again in his fur coat, looking like early Lindsey Buckingham. That bothered me so much. I'm like, what are we doing? And every season, every shot, it seemed like his beard got worse and his hair got bushier. I'm like, what are we doing here? Is this time elapsed? I'm so confused. Like, he got, like, shaggy overnight.
He did. He did. And especially when they had him held up in that cell. Boy, it was like he needs some product. You know, he needs.
I was just about to say, hey, give him the product. That's product. Part of jail. You go to jail, you stab your girl in the chest, they take your products away from you, and that's what happens. Because he looked all frizzy. I was like, you know, he's not blessed, but he's got that hair. You know what I'm saying? He needs a little, like, frizz control or something, because it was some shine or something, because it was not working. Just groom it out the window.
Yeah. They, you know, there was a little touch of realism there. You're in jail.
Glad to see you guys were talking about the things that are matter to the story.
You don't have access to your conditioning and your shampoo and all that stuff.
He was looking pretty rough. It took a while for the lords of Westeros to assemble. Obviously, he's going to be in there for a couple of weeks. You know, Sansa's got to come from.
I mean, Bram is not traveling fast, man. Yeah. Bram is not getting there quick.
Oh, my man needed some product, I'm telling you. So, but Leslie, I want to thank Leslie and Dan and all the other guests that appeared on our episodes. Before we wrap up this episode and share some general thoughts about the series in general, just take a 30 seconds to write your own ending. Let's start with, who wants to go? Let's start with you, Kevin.
I'm good to go right now.
Go ahead. Write your ending.
Power couple. They become power couple. Arya doesn't like it. Arya goes after Dany. Jon has to stop it, so he kills Dany. Jon, distraught, goes into isolation. Sansa, Tyrion on the throne. That's my ending.
I'd watch it.
I'm in the Arya, you know, with the arrow trying to kill Dany, somehow misses and kills Jon. We all just are just distraught at this. Grey Worm kills Arya. You know, I'm not sure how Dany dies, but in some way Dany dies. And then again, Sansa, Tyrion on the throne.
Sansa and Tyrion. I'd watch both of those, with exception to Arya dying. I can't have my little heroine dying like that. So, the show itself. Let me ask you this, because, and I'm going to hopefully work my way out and away from this, but my fear is, in the way I'm feeling now, is that this episode taints my feelings and view of the series itself. Like, when I ask myself a question, I said, self, Joe, are you going to go back and watch the entire series again for would be my fourth time? And knowing how it ended, I'm telling myself, probably not. Does it taint the series for either of you?
Different for me, because this is the only season I've seen in real time. I binged the first 7 seasons over the last year. So for me, I don't have this, I've waited 2 years for a season to come out. I've waited a week every single time to get a new episode. I'm sitting down and cranking out 3 to 4 hours in one sitting. But for me, no. It's one of the best television shows, one of the best, if you want to call it an event, that I've ever seen. And as someone who's only been through once now, through the whole 8 seasons, I would absolutely go back and watch it again. For me, it doesn't taint it. You know, I saw that Emilia Clarke had an interview with The New Yorker where she basically tries to defend the arc of her character and says Daenerys had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that's how it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Before 11:30 last night, because that's what time I watched.
Sure.
I was thinking that this was one of the best series, and it is one of the best series in television history. But that
should but, 1 hour be able to ruin 7 years for you?
It has.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is, it's going to take me a while to process this and get back to loving the series. Put last night's show in context of the greater series.
I don't think it ruins it at all, the entire series. I think, I mean, this is an unprecedented piece of television, you know, across 8 seasons, that especially if you're watching it with the uninitiated, would be an incredibly fun thing to do. Someone who's never seen, who has no idea that the Red Wedding is coming, you know, who has no idea that Ice Viserion is going to get pulled out of that lake. That's, you know, to have those sort of, I as a parent, I watched Empire Strikes Back. And, oh, my God, Darth Vader is Luke's father? What? You know, it still has that. It still has that. And it's good enough that it is timeless. It's never going to look dated. It's never going to, you know, be a cheesy thing you can't watch. You know, it's always going to have those dramatic beats. And I don't think, you know, even though there are things that I would change about it, that it doesn't take away from the incredible spectacle that it was, an incredibly good storytelling that it was. And to your point about it being, you know, an event television, I think this is probably the last time we're going to have that, just because of the way the medium has changed and the way that shows are distributed today. It's very, very unlikely we're going to have an event where everyone tunes in at the same time. Everyone is on tweeting at the same time. Everyone is having that, oh my God, moment at the same time. That's just not something that is ever going to happen again, and that's a loss.
Yeah,
and
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I think that's how we're trained now. I mean, everything is pretty commonplace. So it only takes a great piece of content to get us back there, and I think that there's so much source material out there that I think can get us back to that point. It might take a while, But I do think that there is source material out there that can generate the same kind of we want to watch this all at the same time. Because even now
– But the distribution of it, though. I mean, yeah. Shows come out all at once on Netflix. Who's watching it all at the same time?
Right.
We all have the same – you know, people have the same reaction. Oh, my God, did you see that? Oh, okay, I see it. You know, and it's great.
But you still have HBO and other – Showtime and other producers that still have a traditional here's the weekly thing. I hold out hope that we'll have some other piece of content that will get us back there again.
And HBO's pre-roll and post, you know, show ads of like, please, please don't get rid of your HBO after this. There's something you're going to want to watch. Trust us.
Was this a story of the Starks?
Yes, I would argue that it is.
It does start and end with the Starks.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And largely in the middle, there is a hefty dose of the Starks. You know, is every major plot point revolving around the Starks? No, not necessarily. But I think most seasons, if you were to stop and say, what were the biggest moments in a season, I think more often than not, that would bring you back to House Stark.
Yeah. I think it's a story of the Starks. I mean, it's ice and fire. Mm-hmm. You could argue it's the story of the Starks and the Targaryens, but I think this is a story of the Starks. Even in the send-offs, you know, we're looking at Sansa becoming queen of the North. We're looking at Arya taking on a new adventure, and we're even looking at Jon Snow, Aegon Targaryen, getting ultimately what his heart wants. I think this is a story of the Starks, which is not a bad thing.
The Starks are the characters in the story who never go full heel. You know, even Arya, when she slaughters the entire Frey family, practically, you're still kind of like, okay,
yeah,
I'm with you.
I'm good with that.
Yeah,
I am good with it. Everything that I own that is Game of Thrones related has a Stark emblem on it.
I see that on your notebook right
yes.
now.
Yes. I mean, that's my family. Those are my peoples. So I'm not mad with that, but just wondering if you guys had the same takeaway. I ask each of you to sort of give me what was one of your either favorite moments or jaw-dropping moments of the series. We're going to listen to Frank's moment now.
Don't fight for honor. Don't fight for glory. Don't fight for riches because he won't get any. This is your city Stannis means to sack. That's your gate he's ramming. If he gets in, it will be your houses he burns. Your gold he steals. Your women he will rape. Those are brave men knocking at our door. Let's go kill them.
So what about that scene resonated with you?
I love that speech. I love that entire episode. That's a great. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one of those full battle episodes. And it's just it, you know, Tyrion's fighting on the side of the Lannisters. At that point, we don't like them.
No.
Yeah. But you're with him. You're with them at that moment. And it speaks, I think, to a larger point of the series that war is not good for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's no winners in a war. There's simply people who lose less. And that, I think, is one of the big themes of the series, is that it's the small folk. It's the soldiers who end up, you know, dying, and the lords sit in relative comfort. And I think, you know, his speech there that, you know, those are brave men out there. He respects them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those aren't the bad guys. We're not the good guys, really. But we're our guys, and we're going to defend our homes. But it's war's not good, and
yeah.
I think that's one of the big themes of the series.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite episodes. The wildfire explosion alone was jaw dropping. I was just in awe of that green flame just lighting up my living room.
I don't think that episode was topped in terms of spectacle until the loot train attack.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy that scene?
You know, I think it's interesting listening to that scene now after watching last night is just the difference in tone from Tyrion's speech there versus anything you've heard him say this season. You know, he's very much just full of aggression and to a certain degree malice, you know, in that speech we just heard right there. And then when you hear him speak last night or any point this season, he's more of a contemplative spirit. He's gentle, if you will. Like, he's been hardened over time through all the losses and all the things he's had to go through that he's even softened a good bit. So it's just interesting to sort of hear those two contrasts.
Yeah. You're right. He was fighting for the Lannisters, but I don't think anybody was like, yeah, I'm all for Stannis Baratheon. You know, so it was easy to, because he was a funny character, didn't really do anything evil. We pitied him because of the way his family, his sister and his father treated him. It made it easy to sort of pull for him as an underdog in that situation, half-man leading.
There's no point in the show I don't think we love Tyrion. I mean, we don't love Tyrion. Tyrion's, I mean, even when he's—
Well, early on, when they first came to Winterfell, I hated all of them.
I thought he was detestful at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah,
that first episode is his talk with Jon Snow, you know, all dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes. He's identifying, you know, with people who are, you know, underprivileged, people who are looked down on.
He still came off as very privileged, which is the way I was taking that family. I mean, I know it's the king's family and their Lannisters coming in, and that's their plot in life. But I just felt that even in those moments that he was looking down on Stark. So early on, I just did not like any of the Lannisters. Kevin's choice.
Have they told you who I am?
Some dead man.
I am the brother of Elia Martell. You raped my sister. You murdered her. You killed her children. Say it now and we can make this quick. Say it. You raped her? You murdered her? You killed her children.
You chose a man who had so much pride, and he was just so full of himself.
Oh, man.
That he got his head crushed like a grape.
He's so good. It's kind. I understand. It's kind of a weird moment.
No, it was a great scene, and it was to watch his head get squashed in like that.
I've probably watched that scene a dozen times in the past month.
Better fight than Clegane Bowl.
Yes.
To be sure.
Well, yeah, and I actually think there's a lot. First of all, when I watch that scene, it's impossible for me not to think of the Princess Bride. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Which is exactly what I think every time I see that scene. But also, if you think about if he's a tad more serious, things shift drastically. You know, if you watch that scene, Jamie, and this is two-hand Jamie, is watching this fight and looking around with a sense of, does anyone else see what's going on here? You know, if things go a little differently, then we have to start to rethink this story. You know, let's he's basically got the mountain down. It kind of looks like he's toying with him, too. And all he needs to do is finish the job. But, you know, he is clearly wrapped up with, you know, the tragedy his family's gone through. If he wins that, you know, what happens to Tyrion at that point?
Right.
Does Tyrion have to get whisked away? Because, you know, this is the battle basically for his freedom to see whether he's guilty or not. So that can change drastically. You know, if the mountain dies there, what happens to the Hound? Then you said it's better than Clegane Bowl. Then we don't get that. Does the Hound's story at that point take a slightly different arc with Arya? And I'll just say it, Oberyn was a cool dude.
He was cool, but he was so full of bravado.
It was almost like that star that burns so bright that it couldn't burn for real long.
And a fantastic ambassador for badass bisexuals, let me just say.
Yeah. I'll tell you why that resonated with me so much is because by this point, I was really connected to Tyrion, right? We began to feel for him. Feel sorry for him, the way he was treated. We obviously knew he didn't murder his nephew. And so I had my hopes on Oberyn that that Tyrion would be freed. You know, we saw it happen with Bronn, the same thing, being his champion, getting mm-hmm. him free. And I'm like, okay, here's his chance. And so when that chance got snuffed out, I was like, I mean, it was so dramatic. It was super dramatic.
But I think Oberyn's flaw there is possibly representative of a lot of what Martin is, you know, writing about, is that people are so wrapped up in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, Oberyn won't finish off the mountain because he's stuck in the past mm-hmm. when the mountain killed his sister, you know, raped his sister and killed his niece and nephew. He won't let the past go, and it leads to his downfall.
And I mean, at one point he turns to Tywin in the crowd and just says, "Who gave the order?" Because mm-hmm. he's trying to get that direct blame. And you're right, he just can't let go of the past. He's so caught up on vengeance that it ends up costing him his life.
Mm-hmm. And here's my moment.
"You already swore me one oath right here in my castle. You swore by all the gods your son would marry my daughter!
Take me for a hostage! But let Rob go! Rob, get up! Get up and walk out! Please! Please!"
"And why would I let him do that?"
"On my honor as a Tullich. On my honor as a Stark. Let him go, or I will cut your wife's throat."
"I'll find another."
That you can you see the hair standing up on my arm? That was one of the most chilling and dramatic scenes of this. And now, obviously, people always talk about the Red Wedding, but that particular sequence within the Red Wedding, Michelle Farrelly's performance as Catelyn Stark was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. One of my regrets about the TV show is that we didn't get Lady Stoneheart. Now, I understand that means we may not have Arya in the capacity that she served, because she was sort of representing Lady Stoneheart, but
we assume.
But that scene, it was so so full of tension, and then the cold blooded response that we got. It stands out as my absolute favorite scene in the entire series.
One of the all time great scenes, I think, in television. And then to go to just cut to black right after that, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, Rob gets his throat cut, Catelyn gets her throat cut, and then just credits.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, when we get a little past that, Mike, I mean, drop. She goes into this the scream as Rob gets mm-hmm. his throat cuts, mm-hmm. this just blood curling scream. And then she herself her throat is cut. Just a fantastic, fantastic scene. Final thoughts on the series.
To add just a little bit to that, that was one of the all-time great moments in the book readers not spoiling it for the viewers. That was something that had been known for years before it happened.
Yeah.
And that was the fun that book readers were having, just watching their friends, you know, with their phones just, you know, on there, just like, "I'm going to watch your reaction
but
as you see this."
But you know what? You know why it was such a great scene for me? Having read the books mm-hmm. and knowing what was coming, mm-hmm. it was still a better scene than reading it in the book. You know, even though I knew it was coming, actually seeing it brought to life visually and hearing screams and having read the books didn't ruin that moment for me, which to me makes it a fantastic scene.
That's it gets to the, you know, the books are a different entity than the show, and both have their strong points. The books can get more into the inner thoughts of the characters. The show can do things visually that the books cannot. And when you were asking me, like, what's your favorite, you know, scene? And I'm thinking, like, okay, well, this is a podcast. We can't do visuals here. Mm-hmm. I have to do something with dialogue, because there's so many wordless scenes in the Game of Thrones. There's so many visuals in there that are just so spectacular that you know, that are just amazing scenes that you can't do on radio because there's
no
dialogue.
Now, the only scene that rivals that for me, and I think we all agree, I think we all mentioned this scene, was the revelation about Hodor.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a listen to that.
You know, that's one of those scenes that I think I have a tendency to kind of forget about it with everything that's going on in the show. And then every once in a while when I'm thinking about what is the deal with Bran, I will go back to that scene and how I still sometimes have a difficult time wrapping my head around sort of the timeline on how that all worked. And it's just such a great part of that show. And like, I remember when I saw it, and as I'm hearing hold the door, I start to go, that's what he's saying. And it's that moment when you start to realize how these two things are connected. That's such a big part of that show for me.
I present myself as a tough person.
Sure.
But I cry a lot in movies. And this was a scene that I actually, I had to seriously choke back tears. Because it was a lovable character, you thought it was just a plot device.
It worked, though. It informed us about Bran at that moment, too. It was because, you know, he is in the present and in the past and inside of Hodor. Mm-hmm. And you see Hodor be created and died in the same moment.
Yeah.
And you know, Hodor was just this, you know, so it was loyal and virtuous and simple and good and, you know, never would hurt anyone. And, you know, to see him just give himself up for Bran, even though, I mean, you can make the argument that Bran sacrificed Hodor to survive. You know, it tears you right up.
It does. So, you know, things I loved about the series, the high production values. I mean, they brought cinematic movie making to the small screen. Introduction to what I think are going to be some very bright stars in the future. I've seen so many faces now in other shows and movies that are original to Game of Thrones. And awesome dragons. Man, who doesn't love dragons? Every scene that had a dragon from the day they were born to Drogon melting the Iron Throne and carrying Daenerys away was an amazing scene to me, and the CGI was just
You never
phenomenal.
Questioned for a moment that those dragons were real. They were just right there, living, breathing. Had you know the weight of them, the wind of their wings. It was all extremely well done, top notch stuff.
Final question: what spinoff would you watch?
I would have watched the Arya spinoff for sure. Here's the spinoff that will not happen that I would also watch because I've heard it theorized on the internet, and that's that Daenerys isn't actually dead. And that's that Jon. There's a theory out there on the internet that Jon was able to survive partially because of his bloodline, and since Daenerys, similar bloodline, that maybe that is why her dragon took her away in the way that he did, not because he was mourning, but rather to take her so she could be resurrected, and now she's alive on a different island.
Ooh, that's a reach.
I'm all in on. No, as I said, it's not happening, right. But I would watch
right.
it.
Okay, all right.
I would go straight. I would go to the novellas, the Tales of Duncan Egg, that Martin's written, which are. It's actually, I mean, probably Brienne's like grandfather or something like that, and Aegon Targaryen, who is Maester Aemon's brother as he was boy, squiring for Sir Duncan the Tall.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great short stories, and I think you could do a series around that. And it takes place about 100 years or so before, so it's not, you know, insanely long before like they're going to with the planned prequel series. And I think it'd be great television.
I think I need a prequel.
You want the Robert's Rebellion prequel?
No. I need more information about White Walkers, about the Night King.
Oh, it you is, want that far back?
It is such they are. It is such a one dimensional portrayal that I need perspective. Mm-hmm. I need to know the Night King's perspective. So we know how the Night King was made by the Children of the Forest. But we get nothing from we don't know what it is they want. Do they want to dominate? Do they want revenge? You know, I need some perspective as to what's going on. That is my one big, aside from the final episode, that's my one big regret about this series, is that the White Walkers and the Night King was such a one-dimensional aspect of this.
See, I kind of got the impression that
I need motivation.
I kind of got the impression that the Children of the Forest created the White Walkers as a defense against the men, the Andals who were invading, and you know, created a monster that got out of control, and just simply like left them with their original programming, destroy the world of men.
Yeah, but they, with the power that they have, they could have done that in 5 years, maybe. I don't know if it takes thousands of years to get to that point. They have the power to resurrect the dead.
One thing that was never explained in the series that I've been told will be explained in the books is that the weather, is that why are there years-long winters? Why are there years-long summers in Westeros? There is some sort of connection with the White Walkers and with dragons, and it was something about Old Town and magic coming back into the world. There's some sort of connection there that makes it all kind of work. So I feel like that stuff's going to be explained in the books.
I hope so.
Yeah, and we'll all be 80 years old waiting for the next
because we book have to a come out. We have storytelling series and a series of books that tells very complex stories spanning continents. So it at times goes into great detail. I mean, in the books themselves, you know, I'm reading you're reading George R. R. Martin describing how a capon is cooked and how honey is drizzled on it, and the
He's
patterns.
He's really into the food.
I'm really into the food. He is really into the food.
Yeah.
And the patterns in women's dresses and people's outfits, and so you get all this detail, and then I know nothing about. And maybe that's intentional. But as a reader, I need to know the motivation. You know, what's driving all of this? Why are you taking babies? Are you raising those babies? They're not just sprouting up into sword-yielding whites.
The baby taking is exclusive to the series. I don't believe there's ever any. Well, okay, no, it's implied, I believe, that the babies are taken, but they're never shown where they take them.
Yeah, well, they showed the one scene where he took them to what?
In the series, not in the books.
Yeah, in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I need to.
Oh, I want to know. I want to know it all.
I need to know. Well, look, guys, I want to thank you for going down this road with me. We have done recaps for all of this season of Game of Thrones, so it was a pleasure. We'll get back to our regular scheduled Pop Life programming from this point forward, but it was such a blast. I want to thank Frank and Kevin, Dan Grzynski, our engineer. We'd love to know your final thoughts on the series, on this season, and the final episode. You can leave your comments on the Pop Life Facebook page at Pop Life WAER. And of course, as usual, there's an in memoriam. We want to say goodbye to the only person of significance that died in this last episode, and that was Daenerys Targaryen.
And my son already has his name, but I'll try your Samhain, just a taste.
My lady, you are from Westeros.
You have the honor of addressing Daenerys of the House Targaryen. Khaleesi of the Ridingmen and Princess of the Seven Kingdoms.
Princess.
Rise. I'd still like to taste that wine.
I have been sold like a brood mare. I've been shamed and betrayed, raped and defiled. Do you know what kept me standing through all those years in exile? Faith. Not in any gods, not in myths and legends, in myself, in Daenerys Targaryen.